Hi, I'm Mark Webber.
Hi, I'm Daniel Ricciardo, also known as the best looking kid in the F1 paddock, and you're listening to the Keeping Track podcast.
You're listening to Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix. In this week's episode, two-time Australian Grand Prix winner David Coulthard joins us to discuss Mark Webber's future. We look at all of the teams and driver news from the F1 off-season, and we speak to journalist Tom Clarkson to analyse the first pre-season tests at Jerez in Spain. There's all that and more on Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix.
Welcome to Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix. Matt Clayton with you for episode 21 of our show, as we start our build-up to the Australian Formula One Grand Prix at Albert Park in just 4 weeks' time. We've had car launches and the first pre-season test in the past week, and later on we'll discuss all the latest news from Jerez with one of the sport's premier journalists, Tom Clarkson. We'll also chat to two-time AGP winner David Coulthard about Mark Webber's future and Lewis Hamilton's chances of winning races straight away with Mercedes. For the time being, it's a new year, a new F1 season, and a new name in the co-host chair. I'm very pleased to welcome the editor of the official program for the Australian Grand Prix, Stuart Bell. Stuart, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So much news since the 2012 season closed in Brazil. I guess the big news out of the last week or so is, well, we're 4 weeks from the first race. We might actually have a 2013 calendar. We have 19 races, and frankly, if you're a travel agent, it's a bit of a mess. We've got one race in 7 weeks through July and August in Hungary. Then we've got six flyaway races in 8 weeks, three back-to-backs to end the year. All very well if you're sitting at the front end of the plane, but logistically a pretty tough one, obviously brought about by New Jersey falling off the calendar.
Absolutely. Look, there's been plenty of talk over the past couple of months about who would replace that 20th round, and you know, the talk of Turkey as well as France and Austria were certainly some of the contenders, but Bernie Eccleston's recently come out and said that it's now too late to include a 20th race. So that means, as you say, that if the calendar stays as it is now, there'll be 2 3-week breaks before and after the Hungarian Grand Prix on July 28th.
And as we know, the Hungarian Grand Prix can tend to be a bit of a cure for insomnia at times as well. So it is, I mean, look, from my personal point of view, I'd have loved to have gone back to the A1 ring. I think Red Bull would have quite enjoyed that as well, obviously, given that they own that circuit these days. But obviously, we have a confirmed calendar now. We almost have a confirmed driver lineup, and it's certainly going to be a case of needing name tags to know a lot of these new guys on the middle and back end of the grid this year. It's a GP2 graduate school. Valtteri Bottas joins Williams this year, steps up from the test driver role. Mexican Esteban Gutierrez joins Sauber, replacing Sergio Perez. Caterham have taken on Dutchman Guido Vandergaarde. We've got Max Chilton and Lewis Razzia, both at Marussia, two rookies in that team. And we're potentially looking at a sixth rookie with Jules Bianchi at Force India. Stuart, really does look like money is more important than ever before at the back end of the grid.
Absolutely. I think the good question to ask is, you know, how much is, you know, required at this point? If you look at, you know, the guys look on the sidelines at the moment, you've got Vitaly Petrov, you've got Bruno Senna, you also have, you know, Kamui Kobayashi, and these all bring sort of significant amounts of sponsorship with them. And, you know, if that's not enough, then what sort of money are these rookies bringing with them?
Well, it is amazing to think that just 3 years ago, Petrov really did secure his seat in the sport, because bringing a lot of money from a new territory for the sport, obviously Formula One going to Sochi in 2014, it's amazing to think that he is going to miss out. But I guess further up the grid, some of the big news with the top end teams, there's been all sorts of things going on at Mercedes. We've had Toto Wolff coming in as executive director after he left Williams. We have Niki Lauda as a non-executive chairman at that company. Speculation over Ross Brawn's future. Is Paddy Lowe coming across as technical director from McLaren? Then, of course, you've got a guy by the name of Lewis Hamilton, who's going to be driving that car this year. Pretty inauspicious start to pre-season testing. We'll talk to Tom Clarkson a bit more about that in a moment. Nico Rosberg, the car caught fire on the first day, which is never a great sign. But Mercedes certainly in the headlines. Where do you see them shaking out with all of this pre-season unrest, I guess you could say?
Look, I think they can be competitive this year as long as they can, you know, have a car that doesn't chew its tyres, its rear tyres, like it did last year. At Mercedes, they've been really building the F1 dream team, haven't they? On the technical side, they have an incredible list of talented people, as you've just mentioned, and they now have arguably the fastest driver in Formula 1 in Lewis Hamilton, along with new executive directors in Toto Wolff and Niki Lauda. But is it a case of too many cooks in the kitchen? I think certainly there'll be no excuses this year, that's for sure.
It was so difficult to get a read on them last year. I mean, early in the season, of course, they won that race with Nico Rosberg from pole in Shanghai. It looked like this was finally going to be the year that they stepped up. And then towards the back end of the year, they were lucky to score points. So it was a real feast or famine for them last year. I guess some consistency would be what they'd be looking for at Brackley there. Speaking of consistency, the man who seemed to finish fourth just about every second weekend last year, Mark Webber. He's had an interesting off-season, has Mark? It's never dull with him, is it? Is a bit of titanium taken out of the leg after some post-crash surgery from Tasmania that's still been hanging around. He's had his say about Lance Armstrong. The latest little spat with Helmut Marko, Stu, I wanted to get your read on this. For those of you who haven't caught up with it, Helmut Marko suggested that Mark can't handle the pressure of a title campaign and falls easily into a downward spiral. Mark's response was to say that everyone has their agendas, and it's been evident for a while now that I'm not part of Marko's. Do you just see this as being yet another chapter in a little intra-team tension that's bubbled along for a while?
Yeah, I do. You know, psychological battles have always been a part of Formula One. And Christian Horner came out in support of Mark after the comments. But you have to ask, is it water off a duck's back for Mark? You know, it's a tough situation. Mark just really has to focus on his own performance, I think, and not try to, you know, try not to get distracted. But, you know, I think perhaps it might be even, you know, more fuel on the fire for him to do better this year.
Well, we know how good he is when he tends to get backed into a corner. That tends to be the way he likes to operate. Just interestingly on Mark as well, he has a new race engineer for the first time in quite some time. Kyron Pilbeam, who's been with Mark for the last 6 years, has gone off to Lotus. Mark's new race engineer is a gentleman by the name of Simon Rennie. And if you don't know Simon Rennie by face, you'll certainly know him by voice, Stu, because he played a fairly crucial role in probably one of the more amusing moments of last Formula One season.
Yes, he did, yeah. He certainly had the comments, the terse comments from Kimi saying, you know, leave me alone, I know what I'm doing. But I think, look, you know, it's not an ideal situation for Mark, but I think it can't be helped. You know, Kyron's moved on to become chief race engineer at Lotus F1. Mark said at Jerez that he thinks, you know, things are working well, they're working well together. So we just have to see how things pan out as the season progresses, don't we?
Well, the conversations will probably be a bit longer than they were with Kimi, shall we say. But I guess probably to finish our off-season news, the story of Sebastian Vettel potentially having Ferrari in his future has bubbled around for quite some time now. And it was interesting to hear Stefano Domenicali at Ferrari finally pouring some cold water on a potential Alonso Vettel dream team at Ferrari. Stu, did you ever see that one actually happening, or was that more of a story that was just a bit of a beat up?
Well, look, I think it certainly makes interesting news and good headlines for you know, in the sport when in the off season. But I think, you know, it makes sense from Ferrari. You know, they want to win the title. They desperately want to win the title. And they don't want another driver within the team to take points off Alonso. But, you know, Sebastian is contracted with Red Bull until the end of 2014. And Fernando Alonso is with Ferrari until the end of 2016. So there's plenty of time for that pairing to happen, if it will happen.
Well, there's also plenty of time for Vettel, of course, because by 2015, he'll just be 27 years of age, so really sort of approaching the prime years of his career as a Formula One driver. It's kind of scary to think where he may end up. But before we just close this segment here, Stu, now the official program for the 2013 Formula One Australian Grand Prix on sale shortly. What's in the mag? When is it on sale? What can you tell us about it?
Well, we have a fantastic season preview to get everything off to a great start. We've got first-hand columns from Mark Webber and Daniel Ricciardo on their preparations for Melbourne. And we've got a really fantastic piece on Lewis Hamilton and how he was lured to Mercedes. And some of the top journalists that are featured are Jonathan Noble from Autosport, Ed Straw from Autosport, and, of course, James Allen. And it's available on from Wednesday, the 27th of February, from selected newsagents, the Herald Sun Shop and the Circuit from March 14 to 17 for $15, including GST.
Very much looking forward to see that, Stu. Obviously, required reading at the track for anyone going to this year's Australian Grand Prix at Albert Park. Obviously, the lead into that is pre-season testing. And coming up after this break, we'll talk to Tom Clarkson about that.
With 1 month to go before the 2013 Formula One Rolex Australian Grand Prix, high demand has seen the release of another grandstand with amazing views of the Albert Park circuit. On the main straight before Turn 1, the Moss Grandstand is now on sale with a four-day pass costing just $320. Fangio Premium, Prost Premium, Centre and Clark Grandstand seats are all sold out, so get in now to secure your seats. Go to grandprix.com.au or call Foxtix on 1800 100 030. This is Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian GP.
The first of three pre-season tests took place over 4 days at the Jerez circuit last week. And joining us to discuss the big news from Spain is one of the world's premier freelance writers and a man whose work we're familiar with on Channel 10 in Australia, Tom Clarkson. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you, matey. How are you?
Very well. Now, we've had a little talk before we come on air here. You need to paint a picture for our listeners as to where you are and what it is that you're doing.
Okay, I am speaking to you at about, I'm doing about 70 miles an hour on a train going through the English countryside where there's been snowfall overnight, so it's there's a reduced service, it's absolutely rammed. So while speaking to you, I'm also speaking to about 100 people on the train, so I have a live audience as well.
A true professional as always, Tom. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty. Obviously, Jerez last week, drivers in new teams for the first time. We've had new cars on track for everybody except Williams. What did we learn over those first 4 days of testing for 2013 as to what we might expect in Melbourne and for the rest of the year?
Well, the first thing to say is that Jerez is a rubbish test track for Formula One. Let's not forget that Lotus did 100 kilometres at the track last year. Kimi Raikkonen was even fastest on the first day of testing in 2012. And then they took their E20, last year's car, to Barcelona. And within 10 laps of going through some of their faster corners around Barcelona, they realised there was a structural flaw in the chassis, and they had to abandon testing immediately and take the car straight back to Stone and get the whole thing mended. So it's a rubbish test track. We had new tyres from Pirelli, and the abrasive track surface exaggerates the tyre wear, the rear tyre wear. So we didn't even learn much about the tyres in Jerez either. All we do, and I actually spoke to Christian Horner, Red Bull boss, about this, is the reason we go to Jerez is that it's about the only place in Europe where you can pretty much guarantee dry running at the start of February. So it's an opportunity for the teams to go there, to do all their systems checks, to do things, just do sort of elementary things like run the car out of fuel to see how accurate the readings are and to know how little fuel they can put in during a Q3 qualifying run. So it was all those sorts of things. I mean, yes, you can look at the cars going around the track and you can see that the Lotus does actually look incredibly stable and it had good traction. Ditto the Red Bull. It actually looked like it had 10% more downforce than anything else. Mark and Sebastian were not even using all the racetrack the times that I was out on track watching. But I'm afraid we're going to have to wait till the Barcelona test when they start doing some performance running to really get a picture of who's quick and who's not.
Hi, Tom. Stuart Bell here. Sebastian Vettel was obviously third fastest on the final day of testing, 0.4 off Kimi Raikkonen in the Lotus. You've said that the RB9 looks pretty quick out on track, but what if you can just elaborate on that and tell us a little bit more about how the RB9's handling at this stage.
Yeah, well, I mean, Red Bull didn't do any light fuel running. So and I don't know whether Lotus did for that matter, but I know for a fact that Red Bull didn't. So it was purely to sort of get a feel for the car on... the train's about to stop. The four-day test for Red Bull was all about just getting a feel for the car on heavy fuel. Now, Adrian Newey was there for all days of the test. And he looked, all I can tell you is that he looked infinitely more relaxed in Jerez this year than he did Jerez last year. Last year, he was very stressy, walking around with his clipboard and scratching his head, not wanting to talk to journalists, all that kind of thing. This year, he would sit down and he sort of would come and join us for lunch in the Red Bull motorhome. He was very chatty. Ask him about how the car's going, he said, okay. Ask him about his rivals, he said, well, it's too early to say, but I think we're in a good place. So you can only, you know, and Mark said that Mark Webber said that the team is in a much better place here with where they're at now than where they were this time last year. I mean, let's not forget, this time last year we knew that Ferrari were having an absolute mare. So, I mean, yes, we could ascertain that from Jerez, and I think, but Red Bull, yeah, confident. I mean, having seen all the cars on track, I would say Red Bull are going to win races. I'd say McLaren are going to win races. I'd say if Lewis Hamilton were still driving a McLaren this year, I'd be down the bookies. I think the car looks that good. Ferrari, it's quite early to say until we see Fernando driving it in Barcelona. We'll only get a look at the expression on his face when he gets out of the car for the first time in Barcelona next week. Yeah, but mate, Red Bull are looking good. Weber has got a good chance, I think, of winning his race for the first time next month.
Tom, you mentioned Lewis Hamilton before. Mercedes had a particularly difficult opening couple of days. Nico Rosberg with a gremlin on the first day. Lewis Hamilton crashed with a rear brake failure on the second day. Obviously, they got a fair few laps in on day three and four, but where do you think Mercedes sit in the pecking order from what you can work out so far, and particularly with Lewis's first days in that team? I'm sure the media frenzy was pretty significant around him last week.
You couldn't get near the entrance to their motorhome. I mean, the British press was there in strength, loving the fact that he switched teams, loving the fact that he had his new £20 million blood red private jet parked on the runway at Jerez. Just wherever Lewis Hamilton goes, it seems there's a story, and he has a propensity to attract stories, whether it's that brake failure on after 15 laps on Tuesday. But, you know, the team, Lewis came out looking pretty happy, I've got to be honest with you. I think he went there thinking the thing was going to feel a complete disaster compared to what he was used to last year. And I think he's come away thinking, yeah, we're close enough. And actually, when I actually managed to catch him just privately on my own just for a few minutes, and one of the things he said is, all I need is to be within punching distance of the front runners, and I can do something with this car. And I said, do you think you're in punching distance? And he said, well, it's very difficult to say because we're only in Jerez, but he says the car feels much better than I was expecting. Yes, I want more downforce, particularly at the front, but the guys are working flat out, they're signing some bits off now, and where are they? I'd say they finished fifth in the World Championship last year, and I would say they'll be mixing. I think Lewis Hamilton could win a race this year on the strength of what we saw last week.
Okay. Esteban Gutierrez did the most laps of all during the first test, 252 laps, I think, despite an aggressive side pod design. Are Sauber optimistic for the year ahead?
They've got a new chief race engineer at Sauber this year, a guy called Tom McCulloch, who's moved there from, and I actually caught up with him for lunch at the end of the test on the last day, and I said, how's the car? He said, well, it's very reliable. Now, he wouldn't be drawn any more than that, but any team that starts talking about reliability at this stage over performance, you always slightly question how ultimately quick the car is. Things Tom did say, funnily enough, is he was blown away by the facilities at Sauber. Of course, let's not forget that BMW spent a fortune on giving them all the latest kit. I mean, actually, Peter Sauber had already put the wind tunnel in, but they've got all the late seven posts of rigs, all the latest kit from building their own gearboxes and stuff. He says, with the facilities we've got, I find it impossible to believe that we can't create a front-running car. And I think in Nico Hülkenberg, they've got a real talent. So, reliable, I see them pretty much where they were last year, to be honest. It's probably quite easy on tyres. The softer tyre, the new soft that they've got this year appears to be quite a lot quicker than the medium. They all ran three compounds of tyres last week, the soft, the medium and the hard, and the soft was proportionately a lot softer than the other. And so when we start going to racetracks where you're using the soft tyre as one of the options, then I think you can start seeing, you know, the Sauber and Hülkenberg starting to run well.
Tom, before we let you go, we've obviously got these back-to-back tests coming up in Barcelona. You mentioned the tyres. They will get a real workout there in all those long radius corners at the Circuit de Catalunya. What do you expect to see next week in terms of teams bringing a lot of updates from that first test and perhaps establishing a pecking order that we can really look at?
I don't think we're going to see a lot of updates at the first Barcelona test. I think what you'll see is the teams trying to get some performance out of their launch spec aero packages. And then I think you'll see the upgrades coming the following week at the final Barcelona test. And so they'll almost be running their Melbourne spec cars there and then trying to dial those in. So I would expect to see Red Bull and Lotus and McLaren going quickly in Barcelona next week. As you mentioned earlier in the show, we've got Williams are launching their new car. And the sort of word on the street is that seems like Coughlan, their technical director, seems to be pretty happy with what they've done. In fact, Coughlan just, isn't it, was quite interesting saying he doesn't understand why more teams didn't delay the launch of their new cars, because the regs have stayed so unchanged over the winter that he says we got an extra 2 weeks in the wind tunnel before we compared to everybody else. And all the reliability testing now is so good on the dynos. You know, the Williams gearbox has done 3,200 kilometres already on a dyno, and it hasn't even run on a track. So be interesting to see what they turn up with. Yes, you're right, the tyres will be given a bit more of a pasting. We'll start to see the long corners, it's a long turn three at Barcelona and the quick turn nine in particular. You'll start seeing the cars that are really good aerodynamically will start to stretch their legs through there. As again, as I said a minute ago, I think you'll see that's Lotus and Red at the moment in particular. And then roll on Barcelona 2, and I think it's then that we'll start to see a little bit of a shape of who's quick and who's not and what we can expect in Melbourne.
Well, certainly looking forward to you and everyone else getting here. Tom, get back on your train before you freeze. We'll catch up with you on a future episode, and thanks very much for joining us.
Cheers, guys. Good to speak to you. Thanks for your time.
Don't forget to like the Australian Grand Prix on Facebook for behind-the-scenes news, updates and exclusive opportunities.
This is Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian GP.
It's been 10 years since David Coulthard took the second of his two Australian Grand Prix victories at Albert Park. These days, amongst other things, DC's an expert commentator for the BBC's Formula One coverage, and he joins us on the line. DC, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
10 years since that last win of yours here. It was the 13th and final win of your F1 career. Does it feel like 10 years for you?
Some days it does when I'm trying to get my old bones out of bed, but in other days it seems like just yesterday. And that's the crazy thing about a sporting career. When you're in the middle of it, it seems to sort of immerse everything that you're doing, and time 1 year just sort of blends into the next. And it's only really when you stop your career that you're able to sort of look back and appreciate just what a great opportunity it was. So clearly, as you mentioned, it was my last Grand Prix victory. Some good memories racing in Australia, whether it was in the old Adelaide track or the more modern facility in Melbourne. But whatever it is, we've always had a great welcome down there. So I know that all the drivers and team principals and mechanics and media and the likes love coming down to Melbourne to start the season.
DC, of course, we've got pre-season testing just about to kick off. We've had launches over the last week. It's a very different thing, testing these days, compared to when you were racing. Very restricted these days. There's obviously a tendency to look at the timesheets a lot in pre-season testing, but to your more trained eye, what should we be more looking for with these tests at Jerez and at Barcelona?
Well, for me, the thing to look at is not really the headline figure of who was faster on the day. You should be looking at long runs. And when I say long run, you know, it should be something from sort of 15, 20 lap or more runs, because then you can at least work out they've got a sensible quantity of fuel on board. The sort of headline lap time figures, very often you'll have some of the smaller teams, mid-grid teams, will be posting some good end-of-day times, because if they're trying to get that sponsor across the line and get them to sign up, there's nothing quite like a bit of, look how quick we're going in testing. Mm-hmm. The reality is it will be Saturday early evening after the qualifying session in Melbourne that we really get the first indication of the outright pace of the cars. And then by the time we get to Malaysia, which is a permanent track rather than the Albert Park circuit, which is a great racetrack, but being semi-permanent, then obviously it doesn't have the same amount of rubber down and what have you. But I think after we've done the first two Grand Prix, we start to build a picture of who's hot and who's not.
And DC, there's obviously a number of fascinating stories that we'll all be watching this year. Probably none more fascinating than Lewis Hamilton going to Mercedes. We know there's been a lot of change there in the off-season. What are your expectations for Mercedes and for Lewis? It's been on the record. Martin Brundle, your old mate there, has said that he thinks that Lewis will win a race this year. Do you think that's being a little optimistic?
No, not at all. I think that if we think back to last year in China, Nico Rosberg won a Grand Prix, and everything would suggest through the junior formula that Lewis has got, you know, that last little bit of extra spark. You know, I'm not being unfair to Nico here, because it remains to be seen that once he's got a true world championship car, whether he takes it and becomes a world champion. But there's no question that as they follow, you know, they sort of had parallel careers up through karting and the lower formulas, and Lewis has always been the one that sort of has shone. So if Nico could do it, I see no reason why Lewis can't win a Grand Prix. And Mercedes have a great engine. They have a lot of talented people there. There's obviously been restructuring, a lot of rumour regarding, you know, the future of Ross Brawn and, you know, Paddy Lowe from McLaren, who's a technical director. Is he joining Mercedes, and various other changes? But bottom line is, the team has a lot of history when it comes to building race cars. And if they've got the aero package right, there's no reason why he could actually win multiple Grand Prix and the championship. Because, just because Red Bull have won the championship the last few years, that doesn't guarantee anything going forward, because you cannot stand still in this game. You know, you have to constantly be developing the package. And, you know, Mercedes now, a couple of years of not having high level success, have had the chance to really study what the others have been doing and pick a direction.
So you mentioned Sebastian Vettel and Red Bull. You've got a unique perspective on Seb from having been around him and also in the Red Bull family. Now, we know he's a three-time world champion at the age of 25, but do you get the impression sometimes that perhaps he still doesn't get the respect his achievements deserve outside of the sport itself?
Well, I think it's always very difficult to do a full judgment on someone in the middle of their career. You know, you can sort of build up a picture of whether someone's a great driver, a good driver, or, you know, just making up the numbers. But I think you have to, you have to wait until the end of their career, really, to make the final call. The other thing is, as well, if you are someone who doesn't say a great deal like Kimi, then, you know, people don't really have much to go on other than the on-track results. You know, Sebastian is, you know, I find, outspoken as a driver would go, not in a controversial way, but he's very happy to answer questions and do his media time. Unlike, if I hope he's stereotypical for a moment, unlike some of his other nationality drivers, he's got a good sense of humour. He's got appreciation of a lot of English humour and what have you. And so, you know, he comes across as a fairly easygoing guy out of the car. And that may all have, played to the detriment of how people perceive him. But if you actually look just purely at his race results, you know, Mark Webber is a great racing driver, and Seb has been able to, more often than not, have the upper hand of Mark during the course of the year. Now, you know, I know we can start getting into micro-analyzing why that might be, but you just need to look at the end of any given season, what the results are, and that's what you call. And, you know, there's no question in my mind he's one of the greats of the sport.
You mentioned Mark DC. Obviously, he was a teammate of yours at Red Bull. You were 37 in that final year of your career. Mark turns 37 this year and will be the oldest driver in the sport. Do you think age is particularly relevant in F1 today? And where do you see Mark's future, given that he continues to sign these rolling one-year deals with Red Bull?
Well, the future's in Mark's hands. He's a great racing driver. He's won, nine Grand Prix, some of them fantastic. You know, a couple of times at Silverstone, a couple of times in Monaco. You know, two very different and challenging racetracks, which shows the sort of depth of talent he has. And if it hadn't been for Sebastian Vettel, he would have been, you know, maybe a multiple world champion. But the reality is, Mark, if he continues to do exactly what he's been doing over the last few years, then he has no reason why he wouldn't continue. I guess waiting in the wings is another young Aussie, Daniel Ricciardo. He's part of the Red Bull junior squad in Toro Rosso and has a very good respect within Red Bull Racing. But, you know, would you, at the end of this season, if Mark delivers the same sort of performances that he has done in 2012, would you not take his contract up and put someone that you still don't entirely know how he'll handle being at the front of the grid? You know, that's the dilemma that Red Bull have. You know, I'm sure that Daniel would be more than capable of doing that, and everybody has to start somewhere. But, you know, you really want to as a team, you want to keep the equilibrium if it's working. You know, if the cake is turning out good every time, then keep putting in the same ingredients. You only make a change to the ingredients if you feel that something's not quite right in the, you know, the end product.
Absolutely. Now, DC, I did want to ask you a little bit about the event in Melbourne. You'll be aware that there's some annual negativity here, I guess, from some quarters about the event and everything that goes with it. Just wanted to get your perspective on, you know, what the international perspective is on coming to Melbourne and also where the AGP sits in terms of the wider calendar.
But there's no question, and this is not just me being nice because I'm talking to you on the phone, there is absolutely no question that Melbourne is a great city for us to come to the full stop. It's a great racetrack within the Albert Park facility. And for the 1 week of inconvenience or whatever it is that local people don't get the access, then I think that they shouldn't be so selfish, quite frankly. And they should think of the greater good, you know, what it does to the local economy, what it might do inspiring young school children to want to either be engineers, designers, you know, whether it's in, you know, engine design, whether it's tires, whether they want to be drivers. You know, you don't inspire people by not giving them a taste of what is out there in the world. Now, if people want to be small-minded and not look beyond their own personal needs, then that's disappointing, of course. You know, there's lots of things that I don't particularly appreciate in life. I don't go campaigning against it because I understand that a lot of other people do like it. So I wonder how the people that put out the negativity and the people that go there and do the little protest, I wonder how they'd feel if I came and stood outside whatever sporting event they follow and you know, put forward my right to say, well, I don't like them doing that. It annoys me. It you know, it upsets my feng shui or whatever it is that they feel is upsetting them. So, you know, I think you have to be tolerant in this world. And, you know, I just think that for the 1 week of the Grand Prix, those who don't particularly appreciate it should just be tolerant of those who do. It's a truly international event. Melbourne's already on the world map. It's a great city. But having the Grand Prix there doesn't do any harm to the local economy. Even, you know, the license fee that has to be paid, you know, nothing comes for nothing. So, you know, license fees get paid to other sporting events, and you've got to think of all the restaurants, the hotels, you know, the duty free at the airport, all of those things. This is, you know, a boost to the economy as well.
Now, DC, before we let you go, your own driving career. Now, we know you stopped racing in the DTM series at the end of last year. So by my reckoning, this must be the first year since you're about 10 years old or so that you actually haven't raced anything. Now, remembering, of course, that we are a family-friendly show here, how are you going to get that adrenaline rush this year?
Well, yeah, actually, in 2009, I didn't compete in any races. So when I stopped at the end of 2008, I just, you know, threw myself into, you know, normal business life and sort of the public role that I have with BBC and what have you. And it was fine. You know, I didn't miss the racing because I had such a great opportunity in my early career. You know, clearly I came back in DTM to sort of try my hand at touring cars and I really enjoyed that 3-year journey. But that said, you know, you just cannot be doing things every single weekend. So at the time I did all the Grand Prix and all the DTM and all the other things, you know, I literally was never at home. So I have a 4-year-old son. I want to spend a bit more time with him. And, yeah, we'll see what the future holds. But I'm not planning on racing anything right now. And there'll be other ways to get adrenaline. You know, having a 4-year-old standing on the top of some high wall saying he's going to jump gets my adrenaline running.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, any other parent listening to this will understand exactly what that feels like.
No, nodding my head in agreement, DC. Look, thanks very much for joining us. We really look forward to seeing you in Melbourne in a few weeks' time, and here's to a good season ahead.
Looking forward to it. Thanks so much.
Tickets to the GP Breakfast of the 2013 Formula One Australian Grand Prix are now on sale. This exclusive breakfast will be held at the Crown Palladium Ballroom on Saturday the 16th of March from 8 a.m. till 11 a.m. Featuring guest appearances from motorsport legends and F1 drivers, it's the perfect way to kickstart your Grand Prix weekend in style. For more information, visit grandprix.com.au.
Don't forget, you can follow the Australian Grand Prix on Twitter at Oz Grand Prix.
That's all we have time for on this episode of Keeping Track. Don't forget to like the Australian Grand Prix on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Oz Grand Prix, and go to grandprix.com.au, where you'll find a complete archive of all of our shows. Special thanks to our guests, David Coulthard and Tom Clarkson, and thanks for listening. And join us again in 2 weeks' time for the next instalment of Keeping Track.